And welcome to the last 2010 edition of Shedding Lights here on KZSU. Heard every Monday right here at 90.1 FM, KZSU Stanford. And my guest today, lifelong activist and director of the Peninsula Peace and Justice right here on the peninsula in Palo Alto, Mr. Paul George. And Paul, thanks for making it down today.
Sure. I feel like we're the only ones on campus here.
We probably are.
It's pretty deserted around here.
Well, all the workers get 2 weeks off, and the students are gone, so, and they're not back for another 2 weeks. So, kind of quiet around here. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, except I walk in the studio, and you kick off the emergency broadcast alert.
Only because you showed up. They make me do that now when you're going to be on
cover.
The air.
Paul is back on the air.
Paul, the first thing I got on my mind, I've been screaming about it since it happened, is I get a paycheck for my day job, and you might too.
I do.
And what has happened in this new tax bill that the Senate, Congress, and the President signed, so they're all in agreement on it, is that for the first time in our lifetimes, they've agreed to take less out for Social Security to try to give us a break. They're gonna take, so our paycheck will look a little bigger, but less money will be being put into Social Security. Now that sounds like a really sneaky way to try to defund Social Security. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't agree with you on this one. As we talked about just before we went on the air, mm-hmm. There's a lot of things in this tax bill that passed. That haven't been talked about a whole lot. And as you mentioned before we went on the air, a lot of the mainstream media isn't talking about this tax relief thing.
Yeah.
But what this is, I don't see it as an effort to defund Social Security. First of all, Social Security is in much better shape than anybody's talking about. It's good to go for at least another 25 years or so.
Okay.
What this is, and what Obama managed to do in an otherwise grim tax bill, because the Republicans were holding out so strongly for the tax cuts for the rich, that in the bargaining, he ended up going along with the tax cuts for the rich, which shouldn't have done. But I don't see how he could have worked around it, frankly. They were ready. You know, they kicked several million people off unemployment to hold up this bill. They refused funding for the 9/11 first responders who need special medical care. They were doing all kinds of stuff, and they were serious.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to put it down. But so in the negotiations, you know, Obama got some stuff out of this, and this tax holiday on the Social Security, instead of our each putting out 6% or having 6% deducted, it's going to go down to 4% for I forget what period of time. I think
he couldn't do the payroll tax instead, though.
There is still a payroll tax relief, tax reduction. For the other 99% of us.
Okay.
What this is, and there are other things built into this bill that have to be seen as stimulus funding, which is what is critically needed. If you talk to the economists who, you know, are outside of the political situation, people like Paul Krugman of the New York Times, you know, the Nobel Prize winner for economics, they're all saying the role of government right now is stimulus, pumping money into the economy. And that's what this reduction in the Social Security is all about. Balanced off against these terrible tax cuts for the wealthy, Obama ended up getting a lot of stimulus money in that same bill, including the tax cuts. This is stimulus money that is so critically needed, and he was not going to be able to get it any other way. The Democrats in Congress have been trying to get more stimulus money. You know, the initial stimulus from 2009, everybody said it was the right thing to do, but it wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's been looking for ways to find more stimulus money, and this is one of them. This puts a lot of bucks into people's pockets, and hopefully they go out and spend it. and that pumps up the economy a little bit.
You're not concerned that instead of letting us have more off the payroll tax, that he switched it over? Isn't it the first time they've switched it over to take less money out for Social Security?
Yeah, as far as I know. And, you know,
that seems a little sneaky, doesn't it?
We know that Social Security is going to be a fight somewhere down the road.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe not during this current administration or even the next. Because we know the Republicans don't like the system. George Bush wanted to privatize the whole thing. The Republicans still want to privatize it.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking control of the House come January, and we should talk about what that might mean.
Sure.
So there will be more efforts to change Social Security.
What about his commission that he assigned to study it? Alan Simpson, Barack Obama appointed Alan Simpson, and Bill Clinton's old chief of staff, Erskine Bowles, right? Two rich white guys.
Yeah.
And they're both pretty much in agreement, aren't they?
Well, they were about the only two people on the commission that did agree. You know, the commission was not able to issue a report because they couldn't get the 14 votes out of 18 that they needed to say they had consensus. It's not surprising that this commission came back suggesting adjustments to Social Security,
mm-hmm.
Things like older retirement times and things like that.
Raise the retirement age.
But they certainly didn't suggest the radical transformation that George Bush and the neocons were trying to get through during the Bush era. And so, like I said, we've got this fight coming. I don't see this temporary reduction in the Social Security percentage that's withheld from your check each week as, you know, kind of a backdoor way to defunding Social Security. It was a backdoor way that Obama could get some stimulus money approved and out of this Congress without the Republicans just locking everything down. You know, what they did on behalf of these tax cuts for the wealthy is just incredible. I mean, they were going to trash an important, not breakthrough, but an important nuclear arms reduction treaty with Russia. Like I said, they let unemployment insurance expire for millions and millions of people. They refused to fund the 9/11 funders. So to get any kind of stimulus money out there, I actually thought Obama did a pretty good game of poker here and got some stimulus money out there. That's what we need. Again, it's not enough. And back to Social Security, I'll go back to what we talked about some months ago in this program and remind people that George Bush had this so-called reform of Social Security at the top of his list. He wanted to come up with this privatized, put all the money into Wall Street pockets. You know, that's where your Social Security account would be. He had control of both houses of Congress and couldn't get it done. And I still think that the basics of the Social Security program will not be changed because it is probably the most popular government program that we've got going in this country. And people aren't, and they backed off from it last time when Bush was in office because there was such an outcry.
Mm-hmm.
And so it may get some tweaking, you know, like this retirement age thing. They've already done that a little bit.
A lot of progressives have said that Obama could have held out and used that as a held the Republicans hostage in the, like he said, they held him hostage. Well, he said that they were holding us hostage.
Yeah.
But a lot of progressives say that if he had held out, he could have used that as a almost club to beat them over the head as far as, hey, it was Christmas time and they denied your unemployment benefits for millions of Americans. Now they want to give big tax cuts to the rich. And he could have went into this new Congress, which is going to be completely against him. Some progressives say it would have been better for him to go that way. To have some leverage against them and to go out in the public and say, look at what they're doing. Now, do you think that not would have worked? That would have not worked?
Woulda, coulda, I don't know. It's hard to say. The Republicans have demonstrated, I think, time and time again that they are willing to trash our economy in order to win political points against this president. Would I like to have seen him put up more of a fight before cutting a deal? Absolutely. I think they should have put up the fight before the elections in November. This bill was there for consideration. Mm-hmm. That was the time to fight it then and paint the Republicans as, you know, the party of the wealthy and the party of the elites, which they are.
Sure.
I'm disappointed he didn't fight it. Could it have come out any different? I think in the end, probably it wouldn't have come out any different. You know, we always run into this problem of, especially as progressive grassroots activists, of what's the ideal? And we fight for the ideal. And the ideal never comes out of Congress or of Washington. If you ever expect to get, you know, really progressive legislation out of Washington, you're going to be waiting a really long time. Washington is the land of compromise, and that's just the reality. Yes, I wish he would have fought more before cutting the deal. But in the end, except for this tax cuts for the wealthy, and it was clear the Republicans weren't going to budge unless they got that. He could have done a better job painting them into a corner with that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, I don't know that anything absolutely would have changed.
Now, let's move on to net neutrality. We know about the vote that the FCC took last week.
Right.
And it kind of might have went over the heads of some people because the mainstream media doesn't want to really talk about it too much. But what took place last week in that vote? What did the FCC basically lay out?
Well, basically, again, net neutrality, if anybody's not familiar with this term yet, is the fact that you can access any content on the internet that you want, and it'll be the same kind of access for everybody else.
Almost net democracy, huh?
Yeah. It's just like, it's not a perfect analogy, but this has applied to telephones ever since they were started. If you get a telephone, you can call anybody in the country or anybody in the world that you want. You're not limited on who you can call. Based on which company you're with or which, you know, telephone line, level of service that you have. So net neutrality is to guarantee access. It's really for important, not so much for us as consumers, although that's really important, but for the content providers. So that bloggers, so that the Peace and Justice Center's website, for example, couldn't be put on a lower tier. So that if you wanted to go visit our website, we're on, you know, band B, and the site's going to load slower, and you won't be able to watch videos from our site like you can now. That's what would happen if the people who control the wires that all this stuff goes over, you know, the pipes, as they talk about. So anyway, the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, has been trying to work out new rules for ensuring net neutrality, and they announced these rules at the end of last week. And they were pretty disappointing to a lot of people. They seemed to be what people wanted for the internet. If you're sitting at home at your computer or on a laptop at your computer, but they did not do anything for net neutrality if you're accessing things with a mobile phone, for example, or one of these new tablet computers and things like that, the mobile devices. And that's where the future of the internet is. I mean, it's clear that we're getting unwired from the big clunky computers, and people are more and more going to be using their handheld devices of some sort.
So they didn't put any protections against monopolizing the wireless internet?
That's right. And, you know, this, we had kind of a hint of this because, I don't know if you remember, a few months ago, they talked about Verizon and Google had kind of signed off on, we could go along with this.
James Rucker took a whole bunch of people down there from the Ella Baker Center and made them have a meeting with him.
A lot of people have been working very hard on this. It's a critical issue. You know, we all know in terms of free speech how important it is to have access to this kind of information. You know, all the stuff around WikiLeaks currently is a critical example. Just imagine if you... What would be the point of Julian Assange and all these great people with WikiLeaks putting these documents up if nobody could get to them?
Yeah, and maybe that's why they took the vote the way they did. What would it do to a progressive activist like you, Paul? And maybe you don't rely on as much wireless as some younger people now.
Right.
But you did mention that the way of the internet is going towards wireless. Wi-Fi is a big deal now. They have it on city buses.
Yeah.
If you want to have a business now where you're going to have people come in, a coffee shop or anything, you have to offer Wi-Fi. It's just the way of the deal, you know.
That's
we
right.
have Wi-Fi down here in the basement of the radio station. What would it do to just a progressive activist if it was monopolized and there were different tiers put on it and there were clamps put on it? What would it do?
Well, clearly it would definitely impact our ability to get our message out and to reach people. I mentioned our website. We get somewhere around 750,000 visitors to our website every year. It's a very active website. One of the reasons is we post an article of the day. I spend every morning with my cup of coffee looking around for a good news article, and we post that up there.
Mm-hmm.
Save people a lot of time looking around, you know?
Yeah.
Prompt some discussion. Of course, email, getting our message out, whether it's just the weekly calendar of events that different groups in the area are doing, or emergency alerts. If we were on a second tier and that was harder for people to access, it just, you know, would leave us kind of dead in the water because we certainly don't have the money to pay for the top level access that might come with this two-tier system, or who knows how many tiers.
That's how it might be implemented too, right? Through payment. Like, well, if you got the big bucks, you can come over here.
That's right.
And be on the open internet.
We just saw recently, also last week, I think it was a prime example of this. You know, Netflix is becoming, you know, the company that mails out the DVDs and mm-hmm. stuff and kind of invented that business. They're shifting over to delivering movies online more than mailing the discs out and you mail it back. And they have a contract with a company to do the actual video streaming. They don't maintain those computers. They contract that to another company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Comcast announced last week that they're hitting up this other company. I'm drawing a blank on their name, but that's not the important thing. Comcast said, well, this company, since you're putting a lot of content over our pipes, our cables, we're going to charge you more for that. And so that would completely undermine Netflix's business model and impact us as users from being able to watch movies online like this. So, you know, that's a very commercial application, but it's a good way to look at how this could work.
Mm-hmm.
So that in the future, you know, if Netflix wants to pony up more money so that they can stream their videos, Peninsula Peace and Justice Center isn't going to be able to pay that. And one of the features of our website is streaming video.
Mm-hmm.
We video all our speakers and our monthly TV program, and they're there free for the viewing, and thousands of people look at them. But if we had to pay to stream those, we'd either have to charge for people to watch them, and that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't have the money to pay to stream that content. So, you know, we'd be back in the little handbill standing on the corner, please pay attention. You know? Whereas now we can reach hundreds of thousands of people with our website content.
Yeah.
So net neutrality is a critical free speech issue. There was just another example of how, you know, when one corporation has too much control over the content, the Apple iPad store, their app store, There was a special app so that you could access and read WikiLeaks on your cell phones.
Okay.
Apple took that out of their store.
Really?
Yeah. So if you hadn't already downloaded it, forget about trying to find WikiLeaks, you know, on your mobile device. If that's how you were accessing your...
Interesting. Maybe one of the first shots fired in this battle of the internet. And speaking of that, it was reported today that the FCC voted that they were perfectly okay with the merger being proposed by Comcast with the NBC Corporation.
Uh-huh.
And speak a little bit about that, because you, of all people, would know the ramifications if Comcast was to buy NBC, which includes Universal Movie Studios, which includes MSNBC, where some of the most progressive TV is right now, uh-huh. Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow. They could be taken off the air, you know, right now.
This is really a continuation of something that's been going on for the last 10 or 20 years, and that's the consolidation of the media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... I don't remember the figures, but you know, there used to be maybe 30 major media companies, and now there's half a dozen, including Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, you know, the newspapers, television, internet sites, radio, and they've got control of it all. And when you concentrate ownership like that, you're just asking for trouble. You have to think of it as the concentration of power is the way to look at it, because the media is power. And whenever you concentrate too much power in too few hands, you're asking for trouble. Just look at Wall Street. I mean, we're in a financial mess because Wall Street concentrated political power due to their bucks. And they got their way in Washington and it all blew up. They're all happy again and reconsolidating their power. Mm-hmm. And while the rest of us are here, you know, digging through the ashes, looking for the mementos of our previous life. And so that's what it's about. I mean, it's not a new story, but it is a disturbing continuation of this trend of concentration of media companies in particular.
What can people do to fight against something like that? Because really, by the FCC saying that they're okay, then obviously they've been affected by lobbyists. Lobbyists are on the FCC too, especially from Comcast. We know this. By the FCC saying they're okay with it, that's the next step towards... Now, the Senate and the Congress, I think, are going to have to approve the merger. But what could people...
I don't think so.
No. So who does? The Federal Trade Commission?
The Justice Department reviews these things for monopolistic practices, and they rarely turn them down. And the FCC, they will have... And I'm not sure where we are in the process, to be honest. But the mm-hmm. FCC always has a public comment period. And on their website, you can weigh in as well. But obviously, it's not the same as a lobbyist, a well-funded lobbyist, or dozens of well-funded lobbyists traipsing the halls of the FCC.
Right.
But people, you know, should weigh in on these things. There was a lot of reaction. A lot of organizations put out protest petitions and letters and things like that about these new regulations that the FCC put out. And so, you know, we just have to keep weighing in. I think when millions of people, it's my cell phone, I left my cell phone on.
I thought there was a lady under the counter or something.
Bird's hearing a little, Irish music going off on on my cell phone.
Back to the FCC.
FCC,
and their little ruling on the Comcast.
But they do always have public comment periods. And, you know, a couple of million letters from actual consumers and voters can have an effect. Like I said, I don't know where we are in this process.
It's moving right along.
Because
the FCC just gave their consent for it.
It will probably happen.
Do you think it's a nerve-wracking thing that Comcast would want to buy NBC? Do you think that would be a good thing if they did?
No.
Would it be terrible?
This consolidation. We're already seeing the effects of media conglomeration.
Well, sure. And radio. Clear Channel got to take over most all the radio in the United States. Then we found out that during the march up to war, Clear Channel owned all the billboards, too.
Yep.
So since he owned the radio, they told all the touring artists, hey, if you want to have a show in our city, we won't put any billboards up, and we won't broadcast any of your music on the radio unless you come and do a pro-war rally for us.
Yeah, or things like taking Dixie Chicks off the air. Remember that?
Right.
Clear Channel did that.
That, too. Right, so exactly.
That's, you know... So, like I said, it's not just this current Comcast NBC deal. This kind of thing has been going on for a long time. You started to mention what a conglomerate NBC already is.
Yeah, you know? Well, owned by General Electric.
So, I would refer listeners for some really good analysis on this. On an ongoing basis to check out the organization Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting.
Oh, yeah.
And their website is fair.org, fair.org.
They have a great weekly show, too.
Yes, they do.
Called Counterspin.
Yep. Heard, well, it's on different stations here in the Bay Area. I always listen on Friday evenings at 7:30 on KALW.
Okay.
You can catch Counterspin then. But they've been on this for a long time, and I would refer people there. But, yeah, these are critical questions for our time. We're still learning how to use the Internet and all this electronics. We know that it's really important for communications, especially for grassroots organizations.
And it's changing so rapidly.
Well,
now you got so much wireless offerings out there. Like you said, the iPad. Now there's new apps for your phone every day.
Right.
If you have one of the latest phones, you could do anything with it, right?
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, it's... we used to, way back when, think about, wouldn't it be nice to have a universal remote, you know, so that you could turn on your TV and your radio and stuff with it. Well, mm-hmm. these little cell phones are kind of becoming the universal remotes.
They really are.
And, this is, and the internet and this electronic communications is the new town square. And we have to protect our rights to free speech as strongly as we would protecting our right to free speech out in the central town square. And, that's how we have to think of it.
Definitely. And the FCC just voted that it's okay to basically monopolize wireless internet. They didn't put any serious rules on top of it to say, here's what you can or can't do.
Right.
So when things happen there... Some folks are feeling that it might get kicked back to the Senate or the Congress and end up in the courts to get decided. But with the FCC kind of giving their ruling on it the way they did, a lot of progressives are real nervous right now.
Right. Well, it would be up to Congress. You know, the FCC is allowed to promulgate these regulations under their charter and within the limitations that Congress puts on it. So if Congress or if their constituents really don't like this deal, Congress does have the power to step in and instruct the FCC to do a better job on net neutrality.
Of course, they're all vulnerable to lobbyists too, though, right?
Well they are.
Lobbyists are all over them.
They are, but that doesn't mean that our point of view doesn't sometimes get represented.
every once in a while?
Every once in a while.
Being a lifelong activist, Paul, what do you think about the current state of affairs? Here we are in 2010, almost 2011. There's a presidential election coming up in about 2 years.
Uh-huh.
We've just seen this emergence of what they call the Tea Party. These people came out of nowhere. We know they were organized by rich people behind them. And they, they have this, it's kind of a phony, separate political party they claim that they have. They have gotten some people voted in. And we're approaching where this new Congress is going to come in now, where it's looking pretty dicey as far as America might be taking a real turn to the right here severely. And it's common knowledge amongst all the citizens of the United States that want to know about it, that your basic congressman and senator is so inundated with lobbyists that the system has been completely corrupted. We know this, right? Most Americans will tell you that.
The money, the campaign money has certainly corrupted the system, and we need to find a way around that. Public financing is to me the answer. So that,
but we all know it won't get done in the next 2 years. Now Barack Obama needed a quarter of $1 billion to get elected in the last election. That's what was spent.
Yeah,
he did outspend McCain. McCain ran out of money. Essentially, he might have won had he had more money. For if we know that he spent a quarter of $1 billion, we know he's going to need more for the next election, because each time another election cycle comes around, this thing grows like a monster.
Yeah,
right?
we break new records every time.
Yeah,
and
where's the end?
Well, at some point, they will go so far that I think there will be a popular backlash. You know, if you look at opinion polls, people do not like corporate money in their elections. They don't like this Citizens United Supreme Court decision that allowed corporations to fund television advertising anonymously. For the elections.
Some don't like it.
No, the numbers are substantial. They're like 70%.
Did a majority stand up and say they didn't like it?
Well, it takes a while to get Americans in any sort of number to stand up and say something.
Right.
You know, that's, you know, maybe I should take some of the blame for that. But, you know, it's incredible when you look around Europe, general strikes going on in France and Greece over the austerity programs, the students shutting down London in
yeah.
England. You know, it takes Americans longer for whatever reason to get there. But there have been, you know, these popular backlash uprisings, and it does change policy. And we wait around until something so outrageous happens, you know, and then finally the villagers get their pitchforks and storm the castle or something. But
now, didn't it seem like that's what the Tea Party was supposed to emulate? You know, oh, the villagers are mad. They got there, and then we all kind of had to go along with this. Oh, there's a new party in town. But we all know, progressives especially, the Tea Party is not a political party. They might call themselves that, but they're not. They basically embedded themselves in the Republican Party,
right?
And they're trying to pull it to the right. They're not another party at all.
No, they're an ideological movement, and
could you even call it a movement, because they were funded by some very wealthy people.
Well, right? They were. I think it's fair to call it a movement. I don't think it's very well thought out,
and it's not that big either.
And we'll find out, you know, how their newly elected representatives do when the new Congress comes in.
Yeah, we will.
You know, they may be giving the leadership of the established Republican Party more trouble than they're giving anybody else once they get to town.
It does appear that way. Are you worried about the future, though? Just the immediate future, say the next 2 years? Does it seem to, you know, you're a political activist. I guess the worse it gets, the better it could be for you, in the sense that if it riles people up, then you're going to have people there on your side, kind of fighting your fight, right?
Yeah, well, I don't want things to get worse in order to benefit our fundraising or something. You know, the country going to war is good for our fundraising, but I'd just as soon go out of business not have any more wars.
That would be nice.
This trend to the right has been, a long time in the making.
Yeah.
Like all politics in this country, the pendulum swings back and forth. What concerns me is that the moneyed interests, the elites, have such carte blanche now to use that money to influence the political process that, it's very worrisome. this new Congress coming in is worrisome. They come in talking about being strict constitutionalists, that they want to follow the Constitution. Well, one of their main agenda items as they come to Washington is changing the Constitution. It's the one thing they want to talk about. You know, they want to repeal this amendment and that amendment, and they want to, you know, you've heard about this new amendment that they're proposing that 3/4 of the states can overturn Congress if they want to do that.
What does it take now?
It doesn't take it.
You can't
be
it.
Done. It can't be done. So Congress passes laws. That's it. So they're proposing an amendment to the Constitution that if 3/4 of the state legislatures reject congressional legislation, it nullifies it.
Would that be such a bad thing, though? I mean, that kind of does reflect public opinion, doesn't it? If 3/4 of the people...
3/4 of the states...
yeah, they're legislatures, so they could be bought off too, couldn't they?
Think about, you know, Wyoming and Montana and Alaska, some of these more conservative states.
Sure.
You could put together 3/4 of those and not come up to 1/3 of the U.S. population. No, that's not representative democracy to have states overturning legislation in Washington. You know, the House of Representatives is roughly democratic in terms of how many people are represented until you get to these small states. You know, like our own Congresswoman, Anna Eshoo, represents, I think it's about 700,000 people in her district.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 700,000 people don't live in Wyoming, so their representative there, you know, is a little outpowered.
And they get two senators, too, don't they?
And they get two senators. You know, even more disturbing is it's... You know, for political junkies, it's going to be an interesting time in Washington.
The next 2 years.
Yeah, and you're going to see some of the things, we're already seeing some of it, but some of the things that happen that, why it does make a difference who's in the White House. The Obama administration has issued a number of regulations. This is, you know, a power of the White House and the administration that Congress can't touch. For example, the so-called financial reform legislation that passed. It's pretty weak, but it does allow the regulators, gives them enough room to come up with strong regulations. And, you know, if there was a McCain in the White House, he wouldn't be interested in passing any regulations. We have the... Environmental Protection Agency getting ready to come out with new regulations controlling carbon dioxide emissions. That's really important because that's the kind of thing that would never get passed by Congress.
But the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is funded by Congress, right? And if Congress wanted to take away the funding, they could disappear the EPA tomorrow, couldn't they?
They could try.
Haven't they vowed to do that? Some of the incoming Republicans?
Sure, they vowed to do away with a lot of things. A lot of them ran on the a platform of getting rid of the Department of Education, which has been a favorite target of the right wing for a long time.
Well, they figured.
But you have to keep in mind that. They only have control of one house. We have seen that they're more than willing to tie things up in the Senate with those bizarre arcane rules that the Senate runs on.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have the final say. The president has to sign this stuff, and he still has the power of the veto. And... So I don't see Obama signing a bill that defunds, for example, the EPA.
Not if he wants to get reelected.
No.
Now, what could they do to his health care bill, though? Could they defund that?
Well, they're certainly going to try, but the same dynamic is here. We're going to see a lot of brinksmanship.
So they would have to pass a bill and have to get him to sign it?
That's right.
So he's kind of the stopgap.
That's right.
So in that sense,
it's an interesting...
he's like the goalkeeper.
It's really going to be an interesting time to see this balance of powers that the founders built into the Constitution. There are times when you really kind of appreciate their foresight and how well they did in this checks and balances thing. A lot of times it doesn't seem like it's working really well, but I think this next couple of years, it's going to be an epic struggle over the balance of powers and checks and balances.
Now, being a political junkie, to what degree do you think that they're able to pull off the good cop, bad cop? You know, a lot of them are lawyers. They've all studied the law.
Uh-huh.
Lawyers are taught from day one that a good lawyer can fight either side of an argument.
Right.
Walk away and feel good about it.
Uh-huh.
And as
go have lunch with the prosecutor.
Exactly,
if you're
right.
A defense
attorney.
Put
the guy away and then they go have martinis. Now, as politicians, it's in all their interest to make sure that they get along to keep us happy so they can keep their job. And some progressives have thought that there's some good cop, bad cop going on here. What we just recently saw with this flurry of activity just before they all went on vacation for the Christmas holiday, Obama and the Democrats were looking pretty bad to their base. And then all of a sudden they had a big flurry. The Republicans, who threatened to shut everything down, all of a sudden opened up and they were voting for things and things got passed. And all of a sudden President Obama looked real good. And to what degree do you think that could have been good cop, bad cop? Now they all look pretty good. They're all in favor of keeping their jobs. So they, you know, they are kind of a club unto themselves, right? They're really not part of us anymore once they get elected.
There is a certain consensus, among the legislative class and the political class in Washington. That's clear. But I think what's also clear, especially in this current period, is that there is a true ideological struggle going on. The Republicans and Democrats don't look at the role of government in the same way at all. And I think that's the struggle that we're going to see. The Republicans continue to want to reduce not just the size, but the effectiveness of a central federal government. Meaning they want to get rid of regulations on polluters and they want to get rid of regulations on Wall Street.
That can't be what the people that voted for them are thinking, is it?
No, it's not. But it's,
how does that work, where they could vote against their own interests?
It's typical that, you talked about the elites getting behind the Tea Party, and mm-hmm. They have their own agenda, and I would hope that a lot of these Tea Party activists will see over the next couple of years
that they're just being used,
that they've been used. I mean, I don't know, but I've got to think that these Tea Party activists had to be looking at the Republicans in Congress these last couple of weeks and saying, I didn't really vote for a tax cut for the wealthiest 1% of this country. And here they are fighting tooth and nail for that.
Well, see, we didn't see the Tea Party people stand up and say that, though.
No.
That's what's kind of worrisome.
That's right.
You got to wonder, wait a minute, I thought you guys were against all that. But apparently you're for it.
But we are going to see some interesting political struggles, and talking about this good cop, bad cop thing. I was just reading an interesting article this morning.
Okay. Paul George, I want to thank you for coming down and hanging with us.
Happy New Year, Bird.
You too. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And please keep up the good work and stay in touch.
Thanks. And by the way, great job on the Blues Marathon on Saturday. I was tuned in for a while. Not all 18 hours, but good job. And thanks for that gift.
Thank you. This is KZSU Stanford.